His hack bot, I think, is like skillfully built with like a bunch of like smaller models or open source models. What?
Screw you, Rezo. Screw Rezo's like, yeah, Justin, you know, the reason you don't feel it is because you're bad. I'm not sure y'all know this, but two of the most respected hackers in the CTBB community, Bus Factor and XSS Doctor, are now running monthly hackalongs on the CTBB Discord. Okay, you got to check this out. CTBB.show/Discord. We find bugs almost every time we hack. It's crazy, and oftentimes it's not even the people running the hackalongs; it's the community members that are hacking along with us. You definitely increase your chance of finding a bug by being on these hackalongs. So check them out, ctbb.show/discord. Join Bus, XSS Doctor, and yours truly, and let's pop some bugs. All right, let's go back to the show. Sup, hackers. Before we jump into this episode, we're going to do the This Week in Bug Bounty segment. Two items on the list. One, this past week, Yes We Hack released an article entitled How to Use Claude Code for Bug Bounty. And you've heard time and time again here on the pod how to use Claude Code with Kaido, which is what a lot of the hosts use. But if you're still using Burp, this might be the article for you, because they break down how to get Burp Suite integrated into Claude Code, and they show how it can solve some of the Burp Suite labs that they have. So if you're in the Burp environment, this is the article for you. We'll link it in the description. And this is a part of the LLM series that Yes We Hack is doing that has been hit after hit. So check out some of those other write-ups as well. The second item on the list is Vulnerability Vibes. Guys, if you are going to DEF CON this year, this is the party to get into, okay? VulnerabilityVibes.com, sponsored by Adobe and Yes We Hack, another one of our sponsors. And Adobe gave a bunch of seats at this event, which are very exclusive, by the way, to the Critical Thinkers community. So thank you so much, Adobe, for doing that. I really appreciate that. We gave them out in the Discord. If you're not in the Discord, you got to get in the Discord. We have amazing opportunities like this, thanks to our sponsors. So definitely go and meet the Adobe team there if you can. They're going to be around, and it's going to be an awesome event with a ratio of 3 hackers to 2 operators to 1 sponsor. So really awesome event and beautiful swag as well. All right, I think that's it. Let's go to the show.
All right, well, you know, before we get started, I did want to ask you if you have ever seen this photo before, ads.
Dude, what?
Have you ever seen this before?
No, see that photo.
For the listeners only, is a picture of Lionel Messi holding a baby in a bath. And most people will know exactly what this is, but this baby, his name ads is Lamine Yamal. He is the star player for Spain. And these two players are the stars that will face off this Sunday at the World Cup.
No way.
So,
dude, that's hilarious.
Yes, dude, this is a... Basically, you know, I love this post because it basically breaks it down. It says, what are the odds that a baby, you know, basically parents would win a raffle that their kid would get a picture with Messi? Then that baby would grow up to be a generational talent for a major country. Then the baby would become the third youngest player. So you can't do this later in life. You have to do it so young that Messi is still playing. And he's so good that he's still playing even at age 39. And then both their teams both somehow make it to the finals of the World Cup. And then they're able to play against each other. So basically, this is like threading the needle for the most unlikely thing to ever happen. Yeah.
This has blown my mind. I legit thought this was AI, and I was like, this is some weird thing.
Well, I did repost an AI thing of it that's like really, really funny here. Everyone who's still watching, it's a picture of Messi. It's a picture of Messi staring at a baby Lamine Yamal AI generated in the background, and the World Cup trophy is sitting in the bathtub, and Messi's thing says, "We meet again."
What the heck?
There is another rubber duck as well, I've noticed. Yeah. There's a ducky in both.
Yeah. So.
Wow, dude. That's crazy, man. I can't imagine the chances are insane. And I guess this kid's got to be really young, right?
He's 19. He's 19 years old, and he is the star player for Spain.
That's crazy. Wow. All right. Well, let's, all right. Rezo. Enough distraction with the soccer. Uh-huh. Okay. I will say I have been enjoying the World
football.
Cup. Like, say it again?
The football.
Dude. Are you even American? Don't call it football. What are you doing? I have enjoyed it this year. I've never once watched a soccer match before in my entire life, before the...
That's absurd, but keep going.
What was it? England and... Oh, it was a good game, too. It was a good game, but Harry Kane didn't even score that game. It was all Bellingham. Shoot, yeah. What was the game?
It was England's quarterfinals. Who were they against?
Yeah. Yeah, I forget who they were against, but it was a really... Norway, right?
Yeah, it was Norway, yeah.
Yeah. So it was a crazy game. That was an awesome one to take a look at for my first one. But yeah, both of the games that night were really good. So, all right, let's get to the meat. We have a third voice with us here today. For those of you that are listening, we have Ads Dawson, aka OX Moose, and holy crap! When we were prepping for this episode, man. I we were going to try to hit some other content, but I'm not sure we're going to get to that, Ads, because what you have put in the doc here is crazy. So first, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And very glad to have you on here. First I've got to ask you, do you have a bug that you can share with us at the beginning of this episode? All right. I was going to jump right into the hackbot stuff, but hit us with the bug first.
I will do my best. So. Okay. Thank you so much for having me. It's awesome. Love you guys. As of the past few months, I've been trying to be a bit of a CSS injection bro, because, I'm listening to all Justin's stuff and I'm like, wow, this sounds so cool. So the bug I guess I'll talk about today is I had a CSS injection, which I kind of personally I was just really proud of. Anyway, I had a log management platform that had a JSON renderer that could render hyperlinks. Obviously, when you want JSON in the UI, you want to make it clickable. So it has a regex to match URIs. Mm-hmm. If it looks like a URL, it goes through in a HTML. But if it doesn't, go through into the text. So there was a endpoint where you could inject arbitrary JSON. And it routes it through to inner HTML. Mm. Now, normally, I couldn't, because of the CSP, I couldn't execute JavaScript. So, what I did find is that it could, the style source was permissive enough to not allow style blocks. So what I actually used, with the payload was I used FontFace with a Unicode range. And basically a callback. So when the victim's browser navigates to the page, it carries the account name and the account email and a bunch of PII. Mm-hmm. And then you see how stoked I am talking about it. And then it fires just goes in the callback and you just get the entire PII and this insane amount of callbacks. And the first time I was trying with webhook.site, and when I saw it max out, I was like, yes.
Yes. Isn't that the best when it's CSS too? Because you're like, man, I'm taking this thing. I am just bending it to my will,
So cool. I had no idea. So thank you, dude. Hopefully, I'm trying to work my way up to a CSS injection bro. So
Well, I fully accept the title of CSS injection bro. Hopefully, my boys, that developed some of the font face stuff. Gareth Hayes, all those people that have done all the CSS research on the shoulders of giants for sure. Mm. I freaking love CSS injection, and whenever you see it exfil, it's just a beautiful moment, character by character.
Was this if it is this, you don't have to say this, but is it like an Elasticsearch app, which allows you to render JSON objects that are coming in and stuff?
Yeah, exactly right. So you've got a log management and it's firing JSON in, and then obviously all those hyperlinks are clickable. Mm-hmm. One thing I forgot to mention with FontFace is that you can load a URL from anywhere, which is the callback, which is really cool. And then you use Unicode, and you can extract one character at a time.
Sweet.
But yeah, it looks and feels exactly like an Elasticsearch kind of graph thing.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting thought too, is you see all these error logging platforms, I wonder if there's places where that JSON is being rendered in like whether it's being parsed or whether that JSON is being rendered directly, and whether there's some sort of syntax consistency for like nice interactable JSON that we could go after to kind of make that a more generalized bug class.
Well, there's so many of those. There's like LangSmith, LangFuse, like Fire something, like almost all the AI apps that do observability, all of like the AI observability apps all have like a bunch of JSON rendering, because whenever, like, you know, obviously all like the session logs and all the requests are often in JSON format. And so whenever you go into those observability apps to like, you know, to check whether or not like it's attaching the right tools and whether it's attaching the right prompts and all that, it's all like rendered JSON. So I bet there's a lot of apps out there that this could be tested on.
Totally. Yeah. And plus, because it's like a watering hole as well, right? Because this is like a multi-tenant. Sorry, it's a shared tenant between like, you know, a bunch of like SOC users or admin users. So theoretically, it's like almost just like a blind watering hole at any point as well, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's sick, man. That's sick. All right. Great bug.
Thank you.
You know, credibility validated. And man, credibility is about to just go through the freaking roof with this next this next section. So I'm going to go ahead and just share my screen here, because I'm still a little flabbergasted by this, to be honest. This is, for those of you watching, you can see a graph of Moose's submission velocity here. And you can just see, like, there he has been submitting bugs practically every single day. And I mean, some days 13, we're seeing 10, we're seeing 9, I'm just scrolling through 12, you know? Massive amount of submission velocity. And if you look at your write-up post, Signal Over Noise AI Agents in the Operator Moat, which is the write-up that you did on your experiences with your hackbot, we are seeing a massive 728 vulnerabilities submitted in 2026, and we're only halfway through 2026. Dude, what the frick, man? That's wild. Insane.
Yeah. Thank you.
How?
And you have a full-time job. I'm a full-time hunter who's had a leveraged hackbot and have like on the order of like between 200 and 250. I don't understand how you got in so many reports.
Yeah, it's difficult with a part-time job, but I generally love it so much. I have so much dopamine and so much enthusiasm for it that I guess I kind of like become numb to any sleepless nights.
I mean, fair. But let me ask you this, dude. Like, you know, we've been talking on the pod recently about, okay, you know, let me preface this. We're not to this level. So maybe it feels crazy when you're submitting, you know, 10 bugs per day and you're like, okay, wow, this is insane. You know, I bet that would be a different dopamine hit, right? But I, in general, feel a little bit more disconnected from my bugs now. You know, especially when my hackbot finds them, you know, I think it's cool. I think it's awesome, but it doesn't feel like me, you know? So what you're saying is that this is, you know, filling you with dopamine and letting you get past the sleepless nights, right? So compared to before when you were hacking, you know, before the AI inflection here, do you get similar levels of dopamine from finding these bugs?
That's a really good question. Definitely not. I take away a few things from it, which I didn't. So I get to have like trade-offs. But I definitely don't feel like the fulfillment that I would have if I like, you know, that CSS injection that I talked about. However, there's a sense of this excitement around like hackbots, like your own hackbot finding something like really awesome is obviously like, you know, you're kind of like distilling and like self-improving. So there's that kind of takeaway. The other takeaway that I really like is, I guess as well being like part-time, it allows me to, you know, try and keep up as compared to like doing the full-time, which is just, I guess, unique to me. But the other thing I really like, and I think I've heard Rezo kind of say the same thing, and Rezo put out like a great blog post on this as well, is that like some of the stuff that like, AI finds, like I am not like the guy that can go in and like dump like an RCE and then like CSS injection on the same thing. So for me, it's almost like this like great insight into like a triage almost. So you're like seeing, you're like, dude, wow. And then it's just like, you see like some kind of like XTS bypass and you're just like, holy smoke, this is so cool. You're like reading it like you would read like a really good blog post. So they, I guess I kind of take that away. And I'm almost in self-improving. So I'm like distilling and it's doing it. And then I'm also learning off it at the same time, which I really
like. That's very interesting. So you would say it's almost like the experience of that those triagers always say about like, man, I just love triaging Franz's reports or something like that, where you're like, oh my God, this is just such a beautiful thing, you know? Mm. And you kind of get to see that from your own hackbot.
Yeah. It's like, you're like, dude, nice. Like good find. Wow. Especially because hackbots are obviously like the initial primitive that I use, or like the one thing that we're obviously really good at is code review. So like when they're like pulling stuff out and they're like, oh, I found like inner HTML like drops in here, and but there's actually like a regex which is missing here, and it connects all your dots, and you're just like, oh my God, it would have taken me like 3 days of part-time hacking to even like get close to that. And I probably would have missed it.
Justin, I wonder if part of his satisfaction from it is from the fact that, and we'll get into it soon, is like his hackbot, I think, is like skillfully built with like a bunch of like smaller models or open source models.
What? Screw you, Rezo. Screw Rezo's like, yeah, Justin, you know, the reason you don't feel it is because you're bad.
Well, what I'm saying is, even me, like, I feel like I've like skillfully put mine together, but still at the end of the day, it's like, you know, mostly a prompt with a whole bunch of skills, and like my system keeps things running and it targets new targets and stuff. But in general, actually, I guess there is like the whole, you know, like the JS analysis and then going through everything and popping it off the queue. But I just think that when you're using the greatest, smartest model, you expect a lot of it already. Whereas I feel like ads might get a little bit of satisfaction that I don't get running mine with like the smartest Claude and the smartest, you know, Codex model, because he's actually like leveraging these smaller, cheaper models or open source models and still finding crazy bugs with it. So like maybe it's almost like there's some like gaming satisfaction of like taking, you know, mud and turning it into something beautiful and like into a piece of art, you know?
Yeah, well, let's double click into that. Ads, what do you think about that? Do you think it does feel like a little bit more of a personal masterpiece because, you know, and we're jumping ahead a little bit here, listeners, but if you read the article, you know, and one of the things we talked about beforehand was that he's not actually using frontier models mostly for this. So ads, can you speak a little bit to that and whether that contributes to your satisfaction as well?
Yeah, definitely. So I guess I'm blessed because like, part of like my full-time job is offensive capabilities with AI. Mm-hmm. So naturally, I guess I'm kind of like dog fooding, building this all whilst I'm going. But where I work, we kind of hold our hats on like strong capabilities with smaller models and open source models. Like one experiment we did recently is we had like an environment generation where we could produce like potential 0 days. But the thing that was more impactful for me was like getting like an end day or something, like some like a recent O day, which is not in training, but then get that with an open source model. Mm. Like that to me is so much more impactful than like Opus or Sol popping something that is like new and novel. That's all like really cool and is really impactful, but I'm more concerned about the other thing.
Okay, I see. So that's a personal, I mean, it's aligned with your work for sure, but it's also a personal piece of like, I would rather have this, you know, harness or whatever, or have guided these, you know, less capable models in such a way that it produces an excellent result rather than necessarily finding something novel.
Yeah, I guess it kind of like, this might sound silly, but it kind of makes me feel like a better teacher or like, like I'm doing a better job because I'm like, hey, I made the like slightly
the B student. You got the B student to ace the test, right? Instead of getting the A student to ace the test.
Dude, Rezo, I like that, man. That's good. Got the B student to ace the test. That's a great point.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Huh. That's how I feel whenever I'm walking you through bugs, Justin. I'm like, you know, can I get Justin to understand this?
You're
I'm the C student. The today, I'm just joking. I'm just joking, listeners. I'm just joking.
I'm going to bring out my parenty waggy finger now.
No, okay. Justin's wagging his finger at me.
Okay. Well, dude, that's really cool. I cannot believe you are getting these results with just open source models. So one of the things I wanted to ask about this was like, and maybe your work is helping with this, but what does running those at an effective level look like? Like, are you spending $1,000 a month on like infrastructure to run all these models, or do you have your own personal server? Are you using VPS? Like, double click.
Yeah, is it OpenRouter? What is it? Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing that we're building, we have an SDK which uses LightLM, so you can choose from like any model, whether it's like Frontier or open source or even local. I do not have a GPU rig. That's something that I'm very much looking into. I moved country recently, so getting hardware was not a good idea.
Welcome to the US.
Yeah, thanks, dude. It's so good to be here. So I guess inference builds, this probably would have been like a really good insight. I think I'd probably be spending like over a month, maybe taking away like my Claude Code subscription, which I might use for like a side bit of hacking or like escalating something. Probably like a couple of $1,000 a month. But the return on investment for me is so much more worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's huge, because I feel like, you know, everyone I know is kind of calculating this with subsidized token cost, right? Like everyone's basically using Claude and Codex subs, and so it's all subsidized token cost. The fact that you're showing like a good ROI paying actual real cost for tokens is huge. Like, I think that's you know, that leverage, like the fact that there is still that much slack in the system is like a really good sign.
Yeah. As much as I hate to say it, Rozo, I think you and I are kind of digging ourselves into a hole of almost tech debt here, is what it's like by using these subsidized tokens, right? Like,
well, no, I think that you can just cut over eventually, right? Like, it doesn't take that long using these top models to cut over.
I don't know.
My Hackbot system can use OpenRouter already. So I think just replacing that with the Light LLM is pretty trivial. So I don't think that there's much of a risk on my end.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe I don't. Maybe you've upgraded your Hackbot system since I.
I've rebuilt it from the ground, yeah.
Oh, have you? Okay. All right. Well, maybe we need to rediscuss. Okay. But that is cool. But I do think what Ads is saying as well is that, and what you were saying earlier is inconsistent with that, which is the harnesses required for using a less competent model are what gives it its power.
Yeah, that's true.
So
yeah,
you can't just cut over, because you need to have learned all these hard-won lessons, across time of having used the B student models to get higher level of result, right?
Maybe, but I think that basically the B students are becoming A students. Like I was going to mention that to Ads. Like what's impressive to me when I look at his returns are that he was having crazy high reports per day before GLM 5.2. Like GLM 5.2 is like the fourth rated model overall. Like it's basically as smart as Opus 4.6 and 4.7. So so he's not really playing with a B model when he's using GLM, right? But my understanding, which I do think we should get into, Ads, is that like, you know, you have lots of little sub agents, and some of them are actually using tiny models like Quinn 3.6 or whatever. So anyways, I do want to hear more about that. But I think what I'm saying, Justin, is I think we're not really digging ourselves into too much of a tech debt, because these models are going to keep improving and we'll be able to replace it with something like GLM 5.2, which is, now that it's open source, is never going to go away and is as good as something like Opus 4.6, Opus 4.7.
All right. Now that you and I have debated this a little bit, let's get the real answer from Ads. Ads, what do you think about all that, man? Do you think we're getting ourselves into tech debt here? Or?
I kind of lean on what Rezo said, because I think a lot of it will be transferable. So like a lot of the work I've done, of a lot of the work that we do where I work, is that like we're kind of like bumping the less capable models with like strong capabilities, and like showing that, like closing the gap between the open source and the frontier. And so naturally I kind of gravitate towards what Rezo was saying, because I feel like ultimately we'll get to a point where, like, if you think like you like in building a harness, you can like use GLM and stuff for now. So like the more capable the open source models are getting at just like hacking and coding, then theoretically you're actually improving your harness as well, if that makes sense. So I do kind of lean on that. I guess as well, because obviously it's part of like my full-time work, but personally, I would be preparing for like the subsidized tokens to go away, just because I guess I'd probably just want to be a bit more prepared. But it's also like really seductive, because Claude Code is like one line install and it's like $200 a month, and you can like pop like so many bugs with it. So it's easy to like stay where you are, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm struggling with right now, is it's so easy. And but, you know, one of the things that I'm not doing is scaling properly. You know, I know that, you know, I know Rezo's working off multiple subscriptions. I am still working off of one subscription. I've changed my system so that I'm capable of doing two subscriptions. But for some reason at this point, I have not actually like done it yet.
How do you not use that?
I know.
How do you not max out like every day?
I know, dude. Yeah. But the thing is, I'm just running one agent and it's doing like a good job. I mean,
You're doing well. Yeah.
You know, but the thing is, I'm so stretched thin in other areas right now. So it's just, you know, like next week, I really, really hope to get that done. But yeah, I think that one of the things that's difficult about transitioning away from Cloud Code is that it does have a good agentic loop though. So I don't know, maybe that's something that I need to solve as well.
Well, I mean, you can use stuff like Hermes or Open Code or whatever if you want to use open source and you don't want to build the whole like system that Ads has built. I will say the other reason here, I think this is another interesting point about why I don't think we're digging ourselves in a hole, Justin, is like the harnesses required for hacking and like, you know, long running tasks are similar to those in coding, and the model providers are like incentivized to keep that those harnesses improving. And we're already at the point where now like Codexes just as a harness, like the desktop app is like incredibly good at like using a browser and using the system and using proxies and all that. Just even if you don't give it any skills or anything. And I think that I have seen, you know, like Expo a year and a half ago, like you had to use a bunch of like special and crazy harnesses, kind of like what Ads is building with Dreadnought, and in order to get decent results. Like you could like literally find no bugs without a good harness, and you could find like, you know, low and medium bugs with a harness, right? And you know, like just like lower hanging fruit. Now everyone can find like medium hanging fruit with almost no harness, like literally just Claude Code or Codex, right? So the trajectory is like, you know, less harness engineering required over time. And that's because the base and default harnesses are improving. And so I think that you'll continue to see that, right? Open source ones like Hermes will continue to get better, and closed source ones like Claude Code and Codex will continue to get better. I do think there's always going to be like at least a small gap there between like people who are experts who are like, you know, designing these well, like Ads or, you know, like us or, you know, like Haddix, like, you know, people like that. But I think that gap has like shrank over time. And my guess is that it'll keep shrinking. And that's, you know, the big reason why we're not in a hole.
Yeah, I really like that thought. The thing I was actually going to mention as well, Justin, is I think that's one of the things that will probably like my forecast, I guess, for like bug bounty in general is like you see this like trend, but everyone's like different hackers. Like you are like, you guys are like both very good at very different things or like things that are similar. But like if you didn't tell me like what you were doing for a hackbot, Justin, I would have guessed like what you just said, because I feel like that's your style and your flow. And that works really well for you because the payouts can be like huge on one bug. Whereas like, someone can be doing like a full recon thing and like maybe gaining like a fifth of it, but then like ripping 8 Claude Code subscriptions.
Right.
So I think like based on your like hacking style, there's one reason as well I would probably not do it, because I've spoke to people who do it and it just sounds horrendous. Like as in Plus I just moved anyway, so I don't have that many credit cards. But
actually, this is a great point. Justin, you're right. My current setup is way more leveraged in a way where if token substitution goes away, it's harder on my current system. Whereas your current system, what do you spend? Like you're using one Claude sub, even like worst case, if you had to pay token costs on that, it'd be $2,000 a month. Right. And so you're massively outperforming per, like you're basically bounties per sub. We could do like some math here where it's like your bounties per sub is like how over leveraged you are. And, you know, obviously Ads is really under leveraged because, oh my gosh, my screen did the thumbs up sign. I think that's the kind of an interesting way to look at it mathematically. Well,
yeah, I think that is interesting as well. I think I still should scale it, because at the end of the day, what I'm doing is kind of doing a little bit more like what you talked here in your blog post about Ads, which is sort of coming alongside the model, knocking down walls for it, right? Giving it, you know, access to things that it doesn't have access to, giving it a little bit more guidance. And I think that's why I'm getting a lot out of, you know, one sub, just running 24/7. is because of that guidance and intentionality. So can you talk about a little bit more about this whole concept of durable advantage is researcher builder loop, which is one of the takeaways from your Substack, and whether that agrees with what I just said there?
Yeah, totally. So I guess like a long time ago, one thing evaluating models like on a regular basis, it was like, I can't remember how long ago it was, maybe like a year ago. Like models were like kind of good at like doing like, you know, like hacking or coding, but they were like terrible, like logging in and like clicking through a browser and like trying to sign in, or like any kind of consent box or like capture or anything. Like the stuff that as a human you kind of take for granted. I mean, not capture, like I still can't solve capture personally, but like you like taking those things away. So like you take that little like modular block of that problem and you like tackle that straight away, and then you just keep doing that and you keep going through all these layers. And I think of it almost like a, you know, if you think of like the stack or even like, you know, TCP/IP model, once you've kind of nailed all these individual layers, I feel like you're just like giving the model more capability to the point where it actually is almost like taking over your machine, right?
Yeah. So we gotta keep on enabling, we gotta keep on giving more generalized guidance, you know, and directing it, and then we keep building it up.
Like the like the self-improvement stuff as well, right? So like I try and distill everything that comes out and is really shiny to me and is like really awesome, and I'm like, I can't like take need like some kind of evaluation of that. Like, is this outside of training data, or is this like contextual? Is this like something novel? And then you can like distill that back into your skills and capabilities, so you're actually self-improving. So the next time you like hack on something, then effectively you've got like a net new gain on top of the original.
Yeah. So this kind of goes back to what we were talking about before with the orchestration piece, like building your own harness versus using like Claude Code. So I guess building that is one of the advantages of building your own harness, I guess, is that you get to more intentionally build the stack that the AI is working with.
Yeah, like we at my company we have an SDK, so we're like very bullish on like the way that we think it should work, because we've just like tried and tested these evaluations on these techniques, and we're like, we need like this so we can like inject in like this part of the agent execution loop, because it allows us to do this. And then when we keep just doing that, we keep get to a point where we're eventually somewhat satisfied.
Okay. And this is the, I'm Googling this right now. This is the Dreadnought Strikes SDK. Is that it?
It is not the Strikes SDK. We have a platform.
I would like this.
Yeah, well, like I said, there's a TUI. Obviously, you know.
It's a TUI, in case anybody didn't know what he means there.
Sorry, do you guys want to call it a TUI?
It's a TUI. TUI?
I've literally never heard that until you said it earlier.
Oh, okay. Man. I thought it was TUI. I still think it is. Okay. TUI.
Yeah. Well, listen, sorry,
you stick to your guns. It's better when people stick to their guns.
Yeah. I'm gonna look into that. We'll find. Is that a public SDK? Yeah.
So at the moment, I'm not sure of the exact plans. Okay. It was an open source SDK. We recently shipped product. I'm not entirely sure.
Okay. All right. I'll poke around with that. We'll see. But I did want to ask, though, you said before about, you know, kind of giving high level principles and stuff like that to the AI. I was wondering if you found it helpful to analyze your own hacking sessions, either you as an individual or the AI itself, with a frontier model, you know, to try to extract some of those values and then reintegrate that back into the, I don't know, we're calling them B student models, but like the open source models to increase their efficacy. Have you played with that at all?
Really good question. In terms of efficacy, I actually haven't, to be honest, but I do really like that idea. But I definitely have with, so like using a judge, we have quite a lot of research on like judges and things like that. So like using like a stronger model, which is like a judge. Also my hackbot has like a reflection tool of like assessing confidence. So it's like, it will like be like, oh, I found like HTML injection in this, and it'll kind of go through like the CIA triad, and it'll get like a reflection response and be like, this is just like a gadget. This is a lead. This is not like a report. Like at that point, then you can like kind of chain it with like context, and that entity which is reflecting is the stronger model. You've almost got like someone like me coming up to like Rezo and be like, Rezo, I think I found this thing. And he's like, dude, just do that. And I'm like, oh my God. And then it works. Like that right. Is almost like the human analogy to it.
That's interesting. I like that. It's so funny that you choose Rezo for that, because
that's what we did at the LHE recently. I was like, Justin, like deserialization.
Yeah.
And you were like,
it's just funny because Rezo, I want to say it was JD, and you know, the other day JD comes to me with a thing that he found, and I was like, JD, this is like. You know, I love JD, and JD and I are close. So it's like, you know, it is what it is. But I was like, JD, this is not going to work. like, and he's like, Rezo said you would say that, you know, but I think it will work.
Exactly. I thought it was funny because Rezo
was like, definitely told JD, he's like, don't show this to Justin.
Don't show this to Justin. He's going to tell you it sucks, dude.
Rezo, were you just like putting JD in front of Justin? There's like almost like a guard. He was like, go ask Justin.
I said, don't ask Justin. I knew Justin's opinion.
Oh my gosh. So funny, man. That's awesome. All right. Well, I did have another quote from the write-up that I thought was really, really good, and I wanted to get more information from you on it. It says, quote, the interesting work is moving into verifier design shape, harness shape, confidence thresholds, and feedback loops that reduce how often a human needs to sit in the bottleneck. The researcher mm-hmm. still matters, but increasingly, as the person building the system that decides what survives, right? So, the role here is turning more into building the systems and using some of these pieces that you put in here, verifier design, harness shape, confidence thresholds, feedback loops. Can you give us any insight into any of those four and what has really moved the needle for you personally in your hackbot?
Mm. So I say this with a joke. So reporting, everyone's like, Curl's stopped at bug bounty program. Reports are like terrible. I'm not going to lie, and I'm going to be 100% transparent and clear. My reports are like 80% AI generated.
Yeah.
Like regardless if I found the bug and I give it the primitive and I give it the, you know, I give it like a HTML capture and I'm like, look, I got XSS in here and this was my payload. My reports are like 80%, and I've had like numerous programs say like, we love your report. Which gives me like a high level of confidence that it's doing a great job, but that's built and distilled off like a skill and a thesis that I've used and like that has been pushed into that pushed into that feedback loop. And for me, naturally, like especially being part time, I don't have like a lot of time to do my reports because I prefer to spend my time hacking, if anything. So that for me is, I guess, it's like a really impactful one.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of people maybe overlooked it. Because there was like such bad reputation around like, you know, like agents like throwing emojis and stuff into reports, and that's like, you can do that programmatically or with a model so much easier. Which I say is a joke, because when we collaborate on that, everyone listening, I know how much Justin is like, Justin's reports are like very, very good. And we collaborate on a bug, and I probably wrote it like four times because I just wanted to.
It was a good report, man. I gave it to you. It was a good report.
Thank you. It was like, all Claude. I'm kidding.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I agree with you, man. Like my reports nowadays are also 80%+ generated by AI. Just a very, very refined skill. And actually, I wonder, this is not something I've implemented yet, but this is something that I'm thinking about implementing as we're talking about it, is, you know, really 90% of the time when I have it generate a report, it's like pretty good, but it's too wordy, you know, still, even though in my skill, I say, look, do not be wordy, use simple words, minimum, you know, like amount of text you can possibly use to convey the essential pieces. Right. And then 90% of the time I go back into Claude and I say, make it shorter. Right. Yeah. So I'm wondering whether it'd be interesting actually to implement a verifier or like a judge after the report output, right? So, yes. You know, tell the AI, you know, build in that piece to your system, right? Either agentically or in some sort of other way, and have it, you know, show the report back to the other model, and then have the other model provide a critique and say, no, this could be shorter. This could be shorter. This is an extraneous detail, that sort of thing.
This is because of RLHF. Did you know back in the day, Justin, they did a bunch of like studies on like humans. And if humans are asked to rate, like, is this response better or this response better? Everyone listening, I'm holding up my hands. Like, is response A better or response B better? And the only difference between response A and B is that one is longer. Humans like almost always pick the other one. And I think it's because our minds, it's immediately like, oh, that one has more data, has more information. More is better. You know, it's kind of like the hedonistic mindset. And so I think RLHF.
Say it again. Did you say that they pick the shorter one because it has more data?
No, they always pick the longer one.
Oh, they always pick the longer one.
Mm-hmm. And so for a long time, that's why models are always too wordy. And like, you almost couldn't get top models until like a year ago to just say like, hey, what's up? They would always give you some big old, you know, list of like four paragraphs when you said hi. And it's because, you know, in general, especially now with agentic harnesses, you want it to be longer running. And it was hard for them to train for both short responses when it needs to be short and long responses when it needs to be long. So anyways, you're kind of pushing against what these models are like trained to do. And that's why it's hard to get it to go short for you.
Mm, I see.
That's a really good point. One thing to mention, like, I definitely think that's something they can like easily set up. So just imagine like you've got like a skill and the model writes a report, and then you've got like a judge, which is like just like maybe like a hook or something. And then you've just basically got like a rubric, and the judge is just literally taking one input and it's taking the rubric, and it's like, does it match this format? Does it match just in standards? Like, is it less than 500 characters, let's say? Mm-hmm. Like, if not, then that reflection goes in, it goes back into the loop and it redoes it, and you got like another report.
Yeah, Justin, I thought you were going to take diffs of that 20% you change across a bunch of your previous reports, because you have the initial reports on diffs somewhere, and you also have, you know, HackerOne MCP or HackerOne API key. You could just tell your model, hey, go compare all the changes I always make and just incorporate that into my system writer or my prompt writer.
Right. That's such a good idea.
Yeah,
I really love that. The one thing I will mention, with that like modular flexibility, I know you guys have like anchor programs. I don't know if you like report differently to different programs, because some companies like really like if you like put the vulnerable code and you're like, hey, this is where you're like doing the wrong thing. Whereas like some companies obviously just don't care about that. So you could then just create a rubric based on like each anchor program. So like this program likes like this thing and this program likes the other thing. And then you can almost like tailor it to that. And it gives you like a great way. So you're like shelling reports, but you're actually maximizing your payouts on each.
Yeah, I actually have a different skill for Google VRP because they have more stringent standards for their bounty multiplier for their report quality. So definitely I have that. One of the other things that I've told my AI before is like, this is how Justin does POCs. You know, if it is possible to have it be an HTML page that you can put it there that runs some JavaScript, does some magic, blah, 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 even if it's like an IDOR, right? Even if it's like an IDOR, but there's a way for you to do it, you know, in the browser, then that's the way that that's the way that you should do it, right? But if it does need to be a Python script, well, you know, it's going to be a Python script, and we're going to curl it and then pipe it to Python 3, right? Mm-hmm. And there will be interactive, you know, prompts, you know, okay, here, now I need this ID, go get it from here, and then paste it in. Okay, paste it in. Now there will be, you know, would you like to configure a proxy so that you can see the request as they come through? Yes, you know, yes. Okay, well then put it in, right? Mm-hmm. And I've got all these pieces sort of modularized into my skill. So now, and it just shoots it up to my POC server directly, right? So now whenever it does the report and whenever it does the POC, it boom, hosted on my POC server, you know, it's in, you know, an obfuscated directory. It's got this like, you know, Python file, and then boom, you know, they pipe it to, you know, Python or whatever, and they, you know, see the beautiful interactive POC that walks them through it, and then they can look in their browser or in their proxy and see all the requests, boom, 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 right? Mm-hmm. So, and it also builds in negatives, which I really like. You know, that was its idea, you know, but like, hey, look that I can't do this, but I can do this. And that's where the problem lies, right? It just makes it really easy for the triager to see, oh, well, if I can't do this, but I can do this with the same token, then clearly that's a problem. right?
Dude, that's huge.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm going to incorporate the whole HTML page. That's really cool. And then like host it on your site at some UUID so they can get to it and see it. Mm-hmm. Or a password protected POC page and then put the password in your port. That's cool. But hey, speaking of port quality, I have like the sickest segue. Mr. Ads Dawson was both featured, shouted out, and you know had a project built upon to improve report quality from Meta.
What?
Thanks, dude.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, this is like the most perfect segue you can get. Basically, ads, I'll just let you tell it. The Meta bug bounty program had ads at an event, and they took one of his projects and incorporated it in their entire workflow. And you can actually get more money on your bounties by simply using this tool. So tell us about ads.
Thank you very much. It's very kind. So yeah, there's a Meta great bounty program.
Can you share, Justin?
Yeah, I'm sharing it
right now. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I was lucky enough to get invited to one of their events and just got chatting with the team. Anyway, I learned about this thing called FBDL, which is like Facebook Developer Language, I think the acronym is for. Think of it as like Terraform for Meta.
Facebook Bug Description Language?
Yeah. So you can use this to like provision accounts, provision groups. So think of it as like Terraform for Meta or Facebook or anything. Like you realize how painful it is like creating like 8 accounts on Meta when you've got like facial verification and stuff. Mm. So this is like a really nice programmatic way of just being able to create seed data. Naturally, dude, it's so cool. Like the concept of why they actually
Google
did this
needs
was
this.
Like so impactful. Yeah, Google, like I haven't hacked on Google, but this is like so good for those companies that like just want to allow researchers to create data easily. But yeah, they have a FBDL. At the time, there wasn't any token-based authentication. So you just write raw scripts and then provision it in like the Meta portal. Basically, I just created a MCP. So, and then it worked with the Meta team and we added authentication and some API endpoints. So you can actually like now just say to Claude, like, hey, like, create me like 5 Facebook accounts or something and it'll like return it with the UUIDs. So the idea is those guys were awesome. They published a blog about it and I can't remember exactly what the bonus is, but you get a bonus if you use FBDL like in your reports because they're trying to like...
They can repro it so much easier. It's basically, yes. They could probably just chuck this straight into their QA system and so it just happens like on every build.
Dude, that's sick.
Dude, 20% bonus and Meta pay really well. The team are great, so...
Yeah, 20% bonus up to 500. So 500, you know, max there. But that is still very, I mean, I would use this for free because it helps, you know?
Like, right.
You know? And also,
honestly, not just reporting, but testing. Like, could you imagine just using this to actually test a lot more efficiently and faster? Like, spin up accounts, spin this down, give it these perms, do this thing. Yeah. Sorry, I talked over you, Justin. Go ahead.
No. It's the perfect thing. You know, like one of the main, you know, cards on the table, one of the main things that I do for my AI at this point is it's like, yo, I need an order. Can you please give me an order? You know, so I like go in there and I'll make an order and do the thing, right? And if there's something like this where it just knocks down that barrier for the AI, holy moly, it makes it so much easier to, you know, build out all of these endpoints that, you know, typically, I mean, it's no mystery. A lot of the flow for all of this AI or AI assisted testing is enumerate every, you know, API endpoint and then test every single endpoint. Just test every single one, you know? And in order to do that, you need objects in the actual app, right? And so this completely destroys, you know, a lot of the friction there that would need to pull in a researcher, just like you were saying, ads, which is our job nowadays, is to figure out a way to remove ourselves from the loop even more and enable the AI to do its own thing and find these bugs autonomously.
Yeah. I threw like a Claude and Codex skill in there as well. So they're also kind of like amped up on how to use it. But yeah, super impactful. I wish it was something universal where like almost like all programs could do this. The amount of times you get like a tenant and you're like, oh my God, this is going to take me like a week to set up, which actually hilariously we're all on a live event, which actually that was the case. Like how good would have this been if you could just like, they were another big enterprise, which could probably do the similar thing.
Yeah. Wow, dude. Wow. Very nice. And I will say as well, like as soon as Google started giving really nice bonuses for like fully automated POCs and stuff like that, it made me take the deep dive on how to do this well in the GCP environment specifically. And, you know, it wasn't that bad. You know? and after I got it, you know, working and I understood a little bit more how to use their command line tool and stuff like that, it really helped because I could hand it to the AI and say, like, look, here's an authenticated, you know, command line tool for this. Spin up these objects you need and then, you know, build a script to do all of it together. So I think this is an area where if you're trying to go deep on one of these targets that has the capability to do automated spin up, spin down, you know, that sort of thing, very high leverage area to double click into and make sure your AI has access. Very yeah. sick, man. Very sick. Okay.
Thanks.
I'm going to go back to this write-up still though, because we've got more to cover here. Man, look at this. So between 2025 and 2026, you had your noise and severity ceiling, you know, drop from 32% to 24%. Like, you know, this is the amount of stuff that is noise. Mm-hmm. So your bot has become more efficient at finding valid vulnerabilities, even as you've scaled even more. Do you have a, I know I'm asking you to distill it all down, but do you have a couple key points that you think were inflection points for that noise reduction that you implemented? Like one, sorry, I'm gonna let you chew on that for a second. One of the Expo blog posts that they had was like, these are the one, you know, some of the three things we've implemented, you know, that saw a blip in our graph. You know, this is where the bugs per day went from this to this, and then this to this, right? And I loved that. I thought that was amazing. So I was wondering if there's anything that stands out to you specifically about that drop in noise.
Yeah. So one thing I will say with a caveat is if you look at my like HackerOne, this was just on HackerOne. But if you look at my, I haven't to set the record, I have not done the same on elsewhere. But like I only really started hacking on HackerOne since like October last year, which actually started from like a live event. A lot of the bugs that I was doing around then were AI. Not AI generated. They were AI specific bugs. Which I've actually kind of stopped hacking on AI as much in a side note. So that just to like think about the data, it's a lot different now. Like honestly, like right now I'm ripping like 95% like traditional like web app bugs.
Because
the return on investment is like it's not worth me setting up some like really complex chain for data exfil or something on an AI agent. One thing that I think has really helped with that though is the modularity and flexibility of skills. I can't remember the exact date when they were like introduced, but I think that skills were probably around that transition. And like you can throw like something contextual or a bypass or like you could potentially put like a 0 day in a skill, right? So like the ability of just being able to like attach them, like throw them in, I'd say like those at scale has definitely helped. And like the open source tools, like I think that I can't say for certain, but like I think they're the first like open source like agent browser from Vercel's SDK, and that was like so impactful. So it's definitely as like the tools have become more capable, and definitely from the skills, I would say.
So that's interesting. Are you using skills in mass? Do you have like 100 skills in your harness?
I don't have like 100. I'd probably say I'm close to 65 ish. With some of those being contextual.
Yeah.
Are you really?
Yeah. Dude, like one thing, blind SQL injection I got like a week ago. I was just like, why is it really struggling with SQL map? And I'm like, and then I asked, I got like a reflection model. I was like, look at this trajectory. Like, tell me where it struggled with SQL map. And it's like, oh, SQL map, I'm terrible with SQL injection. So the fact I got a SQL injection bug, I was very happy. But like, it was just like, oh, because like SQL map can't concatenate or something like that. And I was like, okay, would using straight Python be better? And it's like, yeah. It's like, okay, cool. Distill that into a skill. It's like, anytime you see like blind SQL injection specifically, like use this script. Here's like an example one. And then, yeah, I've actually had one more blind SQL injection bug since then.
Wow, dude. That's sick. Yeah, I gotta do more review. I think I'll probably formally, yeah, maybe I'll formalize that a little bit with my Hackbot.
Oh, I got to tell you this. This is a perfect time to mention this. I actually have done this twice now. So on the new Hackbot build, I made it build each component like very, very modularly. And then I had it build like an HTML page where like I could basically like click through slides, and each slide was like a breakdown of that feature. And then I was able to comment and like tell it like, oh, I don't like the way this works. I don't like the way this works. And I basically reviewed every like high level module.
That's so cool.
And then I did the exact same thing with skills, Justin. I had it create like a review page, a review tab. Actually, let me see if I can share it and we can just like not show it on the pod.
Oh my gosh.
Check this out real quick.
What a crazy timeline we live in, man, with all this stuff. You're like having to create slides for you about your own Hackbot.
Dude,
man.
Check this out. So this is a skill reviewer. So like you click through it, you can edit it or click approve or save or just move the skill to trash. Cause I realize I have 96 skills right now on my disk. Richard, don't put this in the podcast, but anyways.
Okay, what you're screen sharing right now is not going in the podcast.
That's right. But I mean, people can just imagine it. Basically, it's just an HTML page where each skill is in a separate little, you just click into each skill and you can either edit the skill MD and you can approve that, or you can approve it currently, or you can move it to trash. So I wanted to be able to go through and delete all of the ones that like I don't use anymore or that are lower quality or that I think that the new models do better than me even with that skill. And so this is just like a really cool like way to review through and improve your system manually and remove all the friction.
Very nice.
Yes. That's so cool, because all you need is like a model which is looking at the trajectory of like previous runs, and it's like, okay, like this skill was called like 5 times, this skill was called 1 time, and then eventually once you get to like a year of hacking, it's like, okay, this skill is like really pointless now because it's just like, you know, for whatever reason it's not being called. Maybe you just don't hack that way, but that's so cool. I love that.
Holy moly, man. Yeah.
One thing, this is definitely not a product pitch, but one thing we're working on heavily is optimization. So there is stuff like you can use, like there's a lot of open source libraries like Jeppa, which you can use for this exact kind of thing. And Rezo dropped like the Tessel skill optimization like probably like a month ago or something.
Yeah, it completely changed everything for me. Like most of my skills were not being called. Most of my skills were not being called because I had the front matter broken.
Dude, that was like clutch that you found that.
Yeah, Jeppa. Wow. It's GEPA. Oh, we'll put it in the show notes.
Sorry. Yeah, I apologize. Jeppa is just like is an open source library. It's just an optimization library, but you can apply optimization in that way to so many different things.
Wow. Very interesting. Yeah, I'll throw this up on the screen here.
Basically, anything you can hill climb, you want to hill climb.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Hill climb is like a algorithm that's used like in AI, like even training models, right? You want to like give it a task, change some things, see if it improves, give it a task, change some things, see if it improves. And like, you can like basically create a loop, and then just, you can tell your agent this, like, hey, let's hill climb that. And it'll know exactly what you're talking about by setting up an eval and then trying stuff and then doing the thing over and over again. It's just really hard with cyber to do that because it costs a ton of tokens and it's often subjective because these models would go down rabbit holes. They might not find it on run one, but they would have found it 10, like 8 other times out of 10. Right. And so hill climbing on cyber specific stuff is quite hard, but you can find all these little niches where you can hill climb.
Like theoretically you were hill climbing the thing you told us earlier, right? With like Opus and Sol, when you were like trying to find like a bug for a while, and effectively you just like a really vibey way is just being like, hey, like why didn't the model find this? And it's like, and it's like, that is effectively like a very simple version of it.
Yeah, in fact, anytime, and I have this built into my prompt, I think we've mentioned it on the pod, anytime that something gets tried a whole lot and then eventually overcomes it, you should write that off as like an insight, because there's something deep there about the model that it didn't get, or your harness that made it really hard to get an answer to something that it could have solved much easier. And so then you want to incorporate that back in at a meta level or at like a direct level. Like at a direct level, it's like, oh, every time I try to call curl in this weird way on this box, it always fails because it's installed in a weird directory or something, right? That's like a very specific one. But a meta one is like, oh, every time I try to find this type of vulnerability, I struggle in these ways. And now I can just put into my, you know, into my prompts to like not do it that way anymore or whatever.
Rez, I love your specific examples.
Dude, the model struggled like
when I
Python.
Put curl in slash Etsy slash lay, you know?
Well, I mean, curl was like a really stupid example, but like oftentimes it's trying to call Python and it needs to like, you know, VNV activate because the, whatever. And it like, and it goes through that same loop of doing it the wrong way every time you start a new task in Claude or Codex. But if you just have in your prompt, hey, anytime you struggle with something a few times and then get it right, add that to this like insights or takeaways or whatever, it won't do it anymore.
That's an interesting idea, whether you should enable it to do that or whether you should have something that watches the transcripts of other ones. Oh, man. I mean, if it's like a haiku or something.
Actually,
like that.
Ads, I have a question about this because I think that the idea of a observer is like a meta concept that could be applied lots of places, but it's not clear that it's better than just letting the core model do it. So like, for example, with my hackbot, with like finding leads and gadgets and notes, I have thought very many times, man, I should just like not make the model do that and have an observer model that's reading everything at like a small, fast, better model that just takes all the notes. It's like a little note taker over there on the side, you know, just like, and so I don't know if that would be better or worse. My inclination is that it would be the same. And so I've just never changed it, but I'm always wondering that. And so Justin, same thing for what you're saying. Like maybe you have that same system, write down insights for things that were hard that then worked well, but I just don't know if it'll improve or not. So I'm curious if in any of the harnesses you've ever used ads, you've had like a silent observer or like a side observer, and has it improved anything?
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's a really good question. So definitely. So like the assess confidence thing that I mentioned, like basically my agents are exposed an assess confidence tool. So like the model is like, cool, I injected like this in this parameter, like it renders as this, like I use like HTML injection or something before. It's like, so it calls the assess confidence tool and it's like, you use this tool when you believe you have like a gadget, a lead, or a bug. And then that is effectively a reflection where the reflector model is like, no, this is a gadget or this is a lead. But what you can then actually do is tailor it per program. So every program has its own like reflection log, if that makes sense. So the reflection model is like, no, like an agent found that before and like that's just a gadget. So you're almost like feeding that back to actually contextual of the program. Does that make sense? I don't know if I explained.
You almost have like a secretary per program. Is that what you're kind of saying?
Yeah.
An assistant per program that the hacker agent can then like reference or talk to.
Correct. Yes. But that's on like every single program, which is just basically like a big JSON, which again is just a big trajectory of tool calls where that reflection model has access to all those tool calls. So it's like, I've seen like six models think they found like XSS in there, but actually realistically it's not. And then that helps with that overall feedback loop.
So does that model, I'm sorry if I'm misunderstanding this, but does that model like passively look at what your current exploit agents are looking at and compare it with the history and then inject into that loop whenever it notices that it's going down a path that another model or, you know, another agent has previously gone down and inject the context from the other agent?
Or is it just a phone call? Or is it just a phone call where the main agent just calls the assistant?
Yeah, it's a phone call, but the option is there if you wanted to inject that. I'm just not confident enough or spend like enough time like watching the thing do the thing that I'm confident that to kind of like turn on the tap of being like constant injection, because I'd be worried about it actually giving it like false positives.
Yeah, or derailing or...
So Justin, he just has his core agent being told, hey, if you think you found something, talk with the assistant first before you go report it. And so then the assistant sees the other stuff and is like, nope, we've been down that false path before. Go somewhere else, you know?
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword though, because sometimes, you know, a different
fifth time's the charm.
Sometimes fifth time's the charm. It really is, you know, like, but right. I mean, to be honest, I will say I've seen a higher correlation with new scope unlocks, new feature assessment, you know, all of that than churning on the same thing. So, and you know, maybe that's a false correlation, right? Maybe it's just because like, oh, well, you know, as soon as they find the new feature, well, the bug just sticks out just like it does to us as hackers when we find a new feature, untouched scope. But I do think that, yeah, that sometimes churning on these things can be impactful. And that's where that hacker intuition, how do we convey that hacker intuition into the AI, right? Where it's like, no, this one needs this one is vulnerable. I know it, you know, and then you just keep churning.
Yeah, definitely. One thing that as well, actually, to mention there is that, like, if you, wherever you're like running this hackbot, if you're like pulling JavaScript as well, or like you're just pulling stuff off the front end, then effectively, like, you could almost have like your reflector agent be like, okay, this is not XSS, but I did notice a diff in the JavaScript has changed, and like, this is the diff, and therefore, like, okay, so actually, is this vulnerable now? So you can almost like keep that like real-time context.
Yeah, that is a very interesting area that I,
like you said, yeah. There's a new feat, there's a new endpoint now. Like, is this actually now a legit thing?
Yeah. And I think that is one of the things that AI is crazy good at, in my opinion, having seen it do stuff, is like, okay, now you build a system that automatically runs, that triggers yourself every time a new code gets pushed, right? And it's like, and then you get the diff and you assess the diff, right? And I'm just like, that is something that I haven't built in. I've like pocked it a little bit, but I haven't actually like built it into my whole system yet. And especially when I pivot from target to target, that's one of the things I want to do, is like, before we leave this target, let's take an aggregate of everything we know about this target. Let's build as much automation as we can to tip us off to vuln patterns that we've seen, and then run it on a cron job, and then trigger you to go reinvestigate whenever something new pops up that matches your signal markers, right? That's going to be game changing when we get that working. Ads, that did trigger another thought for me though, which I wanted to ask, because you've got insane volume here, and I'm wondering how you are distributing the load. Are you pointing your hackbot at specific targets and then just drilling down super deep for 48 hours and then switching to a different target? Or do you have your hackbots working on 10, 20 different targets at a time?
So primarily one program.
Okay.
Because I like the takeaways and stuff that I said before, like, you know, it gets like a really cool bug and you're like, wow, okay, this is like really impressive. Like, is there something like is there some kind of like gold in here? Especially it's been part-time. I haven't set up the infrastructure to kind of do that at scale. Typically I'll go hard on a program for maybe like a few days. And then like you guys as well, you feel like you have like a level of confidence that you've found like a majority of stuff. But there's also like this thing about, you want to, let's say you've submitted like 6 reports. It's like, you get to this point, you're like, I've never hacked on this program. Like, I want to know, like, I'm just going to wait like 2 years and not get any feedback. So there's almost like this like trade-off of like, do you keep pushing, or do you kind of like sit back and be like, okay, I'll see if my reports do get triaged, or if I get like a bit of a bad experience, then it's not worth my time of like hacking more.
Yeah. That's a good path there. That makes me feel a little bit better that you're saying that though, Ads, because I know that Joseph, you know, sprays across a ton of different programs, and I've just had a lot of success with just, hey, I'm gonna let this run for 40 runs, you know, 40 cycles on one program, and just let it build up some expertise and build up some notes and build up, like, I have it self-improving as well, where it's like building its own tools and building its own primitive specifically for this target. And then once it's got that, I think it really gets a little bit deeper and you get some of the more complex bugs, especially when that's paired with, you know, human operator interface. So I especially with a volume like this, I think that's really impressive for one. And I'm wondering, do you know on average how often you spend, or like how often you switch targets? Because that is an insane volume. So I imagine it's got to be every couple of days.
Probably like every couple of days. Yeah. So like, I got invited to HackerOne, and I actually started using HackerOne in like October or something like that. And then because I got like quite a lot of reputation very quickly, I started getting invited to quite a lot of programs. So it's like, oh, new scope. And it's like, consuming. So almost at a point now, it's like, I feel like I'm just being like force fed
programs
in such a nice way. So yeah, probably like a couple of days. And then, like I said, that kind of comes off that like trade off, because you don't know what to expect from the program. A lot of times it's like great, but obviously.
Dude, I do think those are the glory days. Justin, do you remember that when like you weren't getting so many invites that you had to ignore them? And every time you got a new invite, you would just like pivot to it immediately in that moment. I feel like that is maybe one of the like shining eras of my bug bounty journey. It just felt so cool. Like even if I, cause I worked remote for like 6 or 7 years and I had time flexibility. So if I, anytime I got a new invite, it was just like, except go, you know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, dude, it was the best. Yeah. And I think that is a part of the beauty of bug bounty, man. Like HackerOne, Bug Crowd, Yes We Hack, Integrity, they've built an amazing product where it's like, you know, wow. There's this ability for me to go do something that I, you know, I would probably do for free for fun if it wasn't illegal, you know?
Yeah.
And not only that, but we're getting paid. We're getting, you know, new scopes tossed to us on a regular basis. We're getting the dopamine of like finding these bugs, getting the bounty, getting a new target, getting access to new scope. It's just like bam, 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 bam. And it's addicting as hell, which is why so many people do get addicted to it and burn out and you know, it's really like, it's almost like, it really is almost like gambling. Like it's one of these like drug-like activities that you can have. And it takes a lot of control to manage it, but the payoff is massive, you know? Mm.
So good. And like just getting to talk about it with your friends is like, that's one thing I love about like live events is I see all my buddies and it's like, dude, you're like, dude, but no, seriously, dude.
Oh my gosh, dude, it was so fun. We had such a good time. We competed in an event together, Ads and I, recently. And man, we had a blast. You know, I just, awesome. I pulled, you know, you were sitting there with me and some of the other guys that I brought to that event. And we just locked right away and just found these crazy bugs. He was like, Justin, if you'd like to collaborate on a report, I have this RCE right here.
would you like to see some of my RCE, Justin?
Yeah, I'm like, okay, what do you need me to do? He's like, I need you to run Why So Serial. And I'm like, okay. And then it's like, it worked. Yay. I'm like, Ads, you just handed me an RCE. What are you doing? Like,
I like collaborating with my friends. It's good fulfillment for me.
That was great. It was so kind the way you approach it too. You're like, Justin, I know you've got many bugs that you're working on right now. Like so many bugs. And it, you know, if you don't want to, it's fine. But also RCE. And I'm like, what?
Instantly nerd sniped. What?
Yeah. Say that again. what a great event. What a fun time. Thanks. All right, gentlemen. I'm having a blast at this episode, but I do have a hard stop. It is got some family stuff going on today. So we are gonna have to drop. Ads, this was a blast, and I feel like I've got so much more to pick your brain on. Listeners, you know, I'm looking at the actual data here. Actually, in the report, it says 853 plus submissions. You know, Ads has made with help of this hackbot. So reaching 6x of his total full year for 2025. So he is destroying the hackbot game right now. So this is mandatory reading. Okay, you must go and read every single word of Signal Over Noise AI Agents in the Operator Mode.
Justin just assigned you homework.
This is mandatory homework from Professor Justin, okay? And we're going to bring Ads back on again in the future and pick his brain more about it because really seminal, excellent work here,
thanks, dude.
Ads. So thank you so much, man.
Yeah, thank you very much. Awesome being here. You guys rock. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. All right, I think that's it. That's the pod.
Peace.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Critical Thinking. Thanks so much for watching to the end, y'all. If you want more Critical Thinking content, or if you want to support the show, head over to ctbb.show/discord. You can hop in the community. There's lots of great high-level hacking discussion happening there, on top of masterclasses, hackalongs, exclusive content, and a full-time hunter's guild if you're a full-time hunter. It's a great time, trust me. All right, I'll see you there.